Welcome to Casa de Cambio. On today's episode of Casa de Cambio, I'm very excited to have my first guest all the way from South Africa, Sonia Blino. Welcome, Sonia.
Thank you so much. Natasha, I'm really honored to be here. I'm glad that you invited me.
I'm so glad you said yes. And for the listeners who probably know this by now, I heard your talk. I heard a couple of your talks at the World Agility Forum in Lisbon back in September, which seems like a little while ago now. And I so enjoyed your talk. And yeah, I'm so glad you said yes to be a guest on the podcast and speak to the listeners. And today we're going to talk about complexity fitness. But before we get into that topic, there are two questions I ask every guest who comes onto the podcast. And the first one is, what are you currently watching, reading, or listening to?
Sure. I thought, how much time do you have, Natasha? Because I'm one of those people that I tend to have 5 or 6 books at any given time, you know, on my bedside table, and none of them are finished.
For me, it's the coffee table. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the Kindle. But right now, you know, I've been doing a bit of a dive into Tim Ingold's work. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's an anthropologist. I'm really enjoying his thinking at the moment. And then also Rebecca Solnit. And I love her book called, you know, The Field Guide to Getting Lost. So I'm rereading that one.
Fabulous.
A bit of a longer read at the moment is Ian McGilchrist and The Matter of Things, you know, just going deep into the neuroscience. And then it's interesting. I've, over the last while, you know, I've almost stopped reading, let's call them complexity theory books. And I've started getting more, I guess, inspired and value out of poetry. So I've been doing a lot of, you know, I've got diving into David White and John O'Donohue every now and again, and then exploring consciousness with Alan Watts. So those would be the books. And then from what I'm listening to, and, you know, just shorter readings, you know, I'm reading a lot of Nora Bateson's work at the moment, Bio Akumulafe. Don't know if you've come across him. He's an extremely interesting, I guess, philosopher, poet. It's the best way to describe him, from Nigeria. And then Bonita Roy, who's her thinking in complexity at the moment, I'm very attracted to. So yeah, that's kind of a broad spectrum of what I'm into at the moment.
Fantastic. I'm exactly like you. I have a book backlog that is in a little shelf that's in my lounge room. And then I have the ones that I'm currently reading on the coffee table. And yeah, there's about 5 or 6. And I'm actually really bad at reading books. And that's something I'm always trying to get better at and watch less TV. So good for you for having all of these fabulous books on the go. And I'll make sure they're included in the show notes. The next question is, what was the best piece of career advice you ever received?
Sure. I actually had to think a little bit about that one. And I can't actually even remember who said this to me. But, you know, what came to mind was a piece of advice that was around, don't ever force any doors open. So if the door stays closed, it's closed for a reason. Don't try and force it open. And if a door opens, you know, even if it looks a bit scary, walk through. My whole career, basically, you know, I've never allowed myself to stay stuck in a role or in a job that I didn't enjoy. And sometimes, you know, especially when I left formal employment, you know, the last time I worked for a boss was like in the early 2000s when I was working for IBM. And so that was probably the most scary leap that I took, but the door opened and I walked through. So I think that for me has been really valuable is, you know, don't try and force things, because if it's not happening, it's not happening for a reason. And when an opportunity does present itself, don't be too scared to take it. So, yeah.
That's amazing advice. And that's advice that I think really resonates with me and my personal career journey. I have definitely tried to force some doors open in the past, and it was not a good idea. Like you said, it was closed for a reason because it wasn't meant to be. And also I've had some opportunities not work out, and at the time was really disappointed, but in hindsight, it was for the best, because it was not I was not the right fit, or it just was going to go really badly, or, you know, that was a very toxic workplace that I was going to be walking into. That's wonderful advice. Thank you for sharing it. Okay, let's talk about the very small topic of complexity fitness. So maybe if we start at the very beginning, could you tell the listeners what is complexity fitness?
So I think what I'll do, Natasha, is I'll kind of break it into smaller pieces, I guess, you know, so I'll answer the question, you know, from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's start with fitness, because I think for many people, when they hear the word fitness, you know, the images that come to mind are things like, you know, exercising in the gym or going on a jog, you know, so it's physical fitness that comes to mind. And there is definitely an aspect to that, because of that in complexity fitness, because when we are in complexity, and I'll get to, you know, what that is in a second, it does take more out of our bodies, out of our physical bodies, because continuously kind of being in a space where you're in uncertainty, you're exploring, you don't really know, it does require more energy. So we do need to look after ourselves, you know, but that's probably a completely, you know, separate podcast or a completely separate topic. So when we talk about fitness, it's almost more from an ecological sense. So the way that an animal is fit for its niche or for a particular ecological context, you know, so a leopard, for example, is completely at ease in the African bush, and the dolphin is at ease in the ocean. And so fitness is about cultivating the skills and the ways of being that allows us to be at ease in complexity. So that's kind of what we mean by fitness. So then I probably need to talk a little bit about what complexity is. So what is this thing that we need to be at ease in? You know, and I like to go to the languaging. So the word complexity, that word plex, the root word, it means braided together or tangled. And so complex systems, complexity is all around things that are interconnected in ways that we can't necessarily always understand or see. It's more about the relationships and what is connected to what else than the actual things itself. It's an environment that is continuous emergence, continuous novelty. You know, if you can imagine, you know, it's a dynamic context. And there's always latent potential. There's almost like we're in a field of potential that's continuously emerging and forming new patterns. And so it's essentially continuous change. And so complexity, even though we all already know how to navigate complexity, because, you know, even if you think about it, Natasha, this conversation that we're having, it's not scripted. It's not like we're reading this from a script, like we're you know, doing a television show. This is continuously emerging. I don't know what next question you'll ask me, and you don't know what I'm going to say. So it's a state of readiness for whatever it is that comes. And so to be fit for complexity means we need to be fit for continuous change. We need to be able to continuously respond to what's, you know, in the environment, and we need to embrace messiness. Because in complexity, you know, as in a typical family, you know, a family is complex. You would know, especially, you know, just coming out of Christmas, you know, family gatherings, they're not neat and tidy and predictable and linear. So we know how to be in complexity. But then when we step into the workplace, for some reason, we expect things to be very linear, very ordered, very neat and tidy. And so, yeah, I think that is the essence of complexity fitness, is this embracing of messiness, of continuous change, of embracing emergence, basically. And that is why we tend to say it starts with being cool. I don't know if you've come across this at all, but we, in thinking about what it is that enables us to be complexity fit, you know, so these are, you know, myself and some of my colleagues, we came up with this acronym COOL, which essentially stands for courage, openness, observing, and lightness. And I believe this is where complexity, a practice of complexity fitness, starts. So we need to be courageous to let go of the known, to step into environments where we can't necessarily control everything, to try new things. We need to be open to novelty, to new things. We need to be open specifically also to diversity. You know, we will always encounter diverse perspectives, and we need diverse perspectives. when we're in complexity. So openness to that, openness to unlearning, learning new things, observing differently, you know, so observing whatever is, you know, emerging in our context, but then also observing our inner responses to that. So when we feel triggered, for example, when we're uncomfortable, why is that? And can we push through that? And then lightness, which is very much linked to what I think makes us uniquely human, you know, our imagination, our curiosity, our playfulness, and then also not taking ourselves too seriously, especially as leaders, because sometimes our ego can get in the way of exploring and trying new things. So sorry, that's a very long answer to, but you did say it's not a small topic. No. So that's how I would define complexity fitness.
Yeah, there's so much fantastic stuff that you said there, and a few things I'd like to just pick out. One, you talked about, when we're at work, you didn't say this, but in my mind, I went to, well, we do try to control everything that happens at work, and there's so much that's happening in our lives that we can't control. I wonder why, do you know why that is, that we're so, and we get so stressed and upset if something doesn't go our way or the way we thought it would?
I think there are many reasons for that. You know, I think one has got to do with just our current ways of thinking and our languaging, especially around leadership. You know, so if you're in a leadership or a management position, it's almost like you're expected to be in control. Good leaders know the answers to things. They know where they're going, and they're in control. So if you're not in control, you're not a good leader, or you're not competent. It's almost like we've equated being in control with competence. So that's one side of it. I think the other is, you know, I think if we're very honest with ourselves, Natasha, we all like to be in control.
Yeah. And I think it's upset at times.
And I think it's because that predictability, because if you are in control of something, you can almost make it go your way. So you can make it predictable. You can make it certain to some extent. And that makes us comfortable. And humans optimize for comfort. You know, so we don't like it when we're in that uncomfortable place of not knowing what's coming, not feeling competent, you know, and this is the problem with complexity. You're kind of always on that boundary between feeling competent, feeling incompetent. And that's also what makes it beautiful, because that means it's continuously stretching us. You know, it's always, you know, I see complexity as an invitation more than as a problem. But if you are in a place, and also in a context, you know, if you're in an organizational context where making mistakes, admitting that you don't know, you know, not being predictable in terms of, you know, making deadlines or hitting targets, if that is career limiting, then you will find complexity very anxiety provoking.
That's a very good segue into the next question that I wanted to ask you is, I think you've described an organization that might not be complexity fit. How can organizations get complexity fit? Because I know we all live in a VUCA world, or maybe now it's a Barney world, which has superseded VUCA. What can people do? And maybe as well, if you're a leader and you're in that situation where, you know, it's not okay to fail, failure is punished instead of being celebrated, and, you know, you don't have psychological safety and you must know the answer and be correct at all times, what advice do you have?
Sure. You don't ask easy questions, Natasha. I think, you know, ironically, I think part of it starts with not paying too much attention to some of those acronyms that you just mentioned, you know, like VUCA and Barney. Because I find that what they do is, you know, they don't paint complexity in a very appealing light. If you understand what I, you know, it's so Barney, for example, you know, brittle, anxious, you know, all of these. If you tell me that's the context I'm in, you know, it's almost as if immediately I want to disconnect from it.
So I want you to feel stressed.
Yes, it puts us almost in an adversarial relationship with complexity and with change and, you know, with uncertainty, with all of these things that really just is life. You know, it's I think in almost any sentence where you can use the word complexity, you can substitute it with life. You know, we've made complexity this thing, and typically we frame it in the in the context of a problem. So we talk about wicked problems. And, you know, it's, I don't know about you, but I haven't come across many people that would say, oh, yay, it's complex. You know, it's like, oh, whatever the expert is. It's
me. Yeah. I am that person. But I work in change, right? So I don't go anywhere that isn't facing some problems. So, yeah, don't count me out. But, yeah, I hear what you mean.
And, you know, I think the thing is, if you can, and I think this is where it starts, if you can make that shift, and it's not to say that there aren't problems and that some of those problems aren't complex, but complexity does not always necessarily mean that there is a problem. Complexity just is. Complexity is not good or bad. It's just the reality we're in. Mm-hmm. And so some of the problems we face, some of the tasks we face are not complex. Mm-hmm. You know, we know what to do. It's, you know, it's we there's a best practice we can use. There's a recipe we can apply. But then others are messy and, you know, they move when we look at them. And so we would say they are complex. But we can't just say anything that's complex is a problem, because then we almost put ourselves in this, where we're in this phase or this state where we resist the complexity and we resist the change and we resist the uncertainty. And that's not helping. I think I think it's in Zen where they say what you resist persists. So can we get to a place where we surrender into the complexity, where we just accept that something is complex and it's messy? And it's also beautiful, because if you think about every single relationship you're in, everything that you love about the natural world is because of its complexity. It's because it's unpredictable and, you know, anything can emerge at any time. And if everything was certain, we could never have adventures. So I think it starts there. It starts with reframing how we think about complexity and how we think about change, because change and complexity kind of go, they're two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. And then what I really love as a jumping off point, and we're starting to, you know, more and more start in this place with organizations as well, is this concept that Nora Bateson talks about, which is readying for change. So it's not necessarily about managing change, it's readying. And so this, to my mind, and I'm not sure if this is exactly what Nora means by this, but, you know, I interpret that almost as, how can you become or cultivate a state of readiness for any change that might come, even if you can't predict what it could be? So it's change resilience to some extent. And if that is what we're trying to create in an organization, I think there are two aspects, probably more, but two that I'll focus on here. One is, from a systems perspective, organizations need to rethink the ways that they're structured,
yep,
the things that choose to measure,
mm-hmm,
the behaviors and the, you know, the things that they incentivize and the things that they reward. Because very often we create these very rigid structures. You know, and I am not anti-hierarchy. I think hierarchies emerge naturally in human systems, but in many organizations, they become rigid.
Mm.
And those rigid hierarchies, you know, especially because it's linked to power structures, it's linked to incentives again, they actually start inhibiting our ability to respond to change.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that is something that we can't simply try and teach people the skills that they need to be fit in complexity if we don't create a context where they can practice those skills.
Yep.
So if you really want to become fit for a complex world, for a complex environment, you need to rethink, you know, many of the things that you've been taught are best practices, you know, and it starts with things like how we design the organization, what we incentivize and measure, as I said, but then also the meanings we hold to things like leadership, management. Like if you are in a leadership position, what do people expect? What do people think that means?
Yeah.
Do they think that a leader is somebody that, you know, can essentially enable collective wayfinding, that can say, listen, we don't really know exactly where we're going, but we're going to find out together. And this is, you know, who we are and who we choose not to be and all of these. But, you know, we are essentially almost like collectively exploring. Or do they think a leader is somebody that says, this is where we're going, this is the 2-year plan, this is, you know, like creating that certainty that in today's world is almost impossible. You know, so those are things from a from an organizational perspective. But then there is a very big reskilling kind of a component here. You know, we really need to work with people in organizations to unlearn certain things and then relearn others. And this relearning, I think, is really interesting because it links back to what I said earlier, that we already know how to be in complexity. You know, when we are outside of the work context, or, you know, at least when we were children, we were all curious. Mm-hmm. We were all imaginative. We all tried different things. You know, we were courageous in certain ways. And a lot of that has been taught out of us.
Yeah.
Also by, you know, the contexts we're in. And then there's also things that we need to, you know, new skills that we need to learn. So, you know, we very often when we, you know, consult to organizations, these are the two spaces where we'd work. You know, we would work with, let's call it the, you know, the organizational design practitioners, or, you know, leaders, the people who head up strategy. How do you structure differently? How do you do these kinds of things differently? But then also we implement learning interventions where, we focus on things like curiosity, experimentation, sense making, deep listening, the ability to span boundaries and to really, really value diversity. You know, so it's not necessarily about breaking down silos. It's how can you work better across these silos? How do you interact with people who hold very different views than yours? And how do you leverage that diversity? How do you bring your imagination to work? You know, these are the things. And then linked to that is, how do you enable self-organization? How do you manage very differently so that you can create contexts where people can practice these skills, where they can be cool, where they can explore? So yeah, those are probably the two main areas where I think, especially in the beginning, organizations should focus. And maybe also to say, I don't think you ever arrive at fitness. It's a continuous practice. It's this continuous readying process.
Yeah.
So, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. No, that was an amazing answer. Thank you so much. You mentioned wayfinding, and I did want to ask you about wayfinding because that was something you spoke about at the World Agility Forum as well. So firstly, what is wayfinding?
So I think wayfinding, well, it's kind of what the word says, you know, it's finding our way.
Yeah.
And in complexity, I talk about ways finding, because, you know, in complexity, there's never just a single way. I think in life, there's never just a single way. But humans are always wayfinding. You know, this is the interesting thing. So when we're in a very known context, the wayfinding happens almost automatically. It's almost subconsciously, you know, so we follow known paths, we follow known cues from the environment, you know. So if I want to quickly go down to the grocery store just down the road, I am engaging in wayfinding, but it's almost on an unconscious level because it's a path that I've gone so many times. But I am unconsciously or subconsciously, I am kind of following predictable cues, you know, so landmarks that's known to me. If I'm in an unknown context, but it's charted, so other people have been there before, then we, you know, engage in wayfinding by following a map or following a GPS, or somebody gives us directions, you know, or even, you know, if it's a familiar landscape, but we haven't really been there before, we can still follow these known cues, you know, so we can say I'm heading towards that mountain, or I'm, you know, whatever the case might be. What I'm really interested in is, how do we find our way in uncharted territory? So where people, nobody's been there before, there is no map, there is no GPS, and it's not familiar to us. And I think to a large extent, that is the context that humans find themselves in now. When we talk about things like the pandemic and wars, et cetera, people tend to say, yeah, but we've always been, you know, there's always been wars and there's been pandemics in the past, you know, so humans have navigated this before. But I don't think that we've been, at least not this generation, in a world where we have pandemics, wars, deep sociopolitical unrest, climate change, and intelligent machines. All at the same time. And so I do believe that we are in uncharted territory. And so that's why I've been so interested in wayfinding, and in particular, looking at the practices and the ways of thinking and being of people like, you know, the ancient Polynesians and the Vikings and the, you know, people who actually just went into completely uncharted, unknown territory, seemingly fearlessly.
In tiny little boats.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, from a, again, it's a bit of a long answer, but that to me is that's the wayfinding I'm interested in. So as a leader, or as any human being, actually, you know, I think all of us, you know, even just making decisions now where to live and where to put your money and, you know, what to do with, where to send your kids, you know, suddenly all of these have kind of become wayfinding conversations. I think those skills and the ways of thinking are becoming really important for us as humans. And what I also love about it is it does put complexity and the unknown as an invitation. It's kind of an invitation into liberating new potential, finding new things, not necessarily as a problem to solve.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You did give a little bit of advice for leaders, but if they're just starting out on their wayfinding journey, and I think some examples of springing to mind, but if you're a leader that's just realized, oh, crap, I'm in uncharted territory, like, what do I do? I need to find my way. Like, what advice would you give to them?
I think the first, it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about, you know, throughout this whole thing is to understand that it will be uncomfortable and that you need to learn how to be more comfortable in discomfort in when you're uncomfortable. And so you can do many, you know, it sounds like really silly little things, but, you know, it's almost like everyday practices to just help you build that muscle, you know. So it's things like allowing yourself to get lost. You know, I don't know if you've noticed, Natasha, but, you know, it's like, and I'm speaking for myself here. It's not like I'm just giving advice to everybody else. I'm talking to myself. I am almost never without my GPS. Even if it's in an area that I may not know the exact location, but I know the area quite well. You know, I would switch on the GPS just so that I don't, you know, run into a traffic jam.
Yeah.
Or, but so we never allow ourselves, even in safe contexts, that, you know, we know we can't get completely lost. We may just tag on another 2 minutes to our journey. We don't allow ourselves to get lost anymore. Even when we travel, you know, so when I was in Lisbon for the World Agility Forum, you kind of always have like city mapper on your, it's not like you just allow yourself to get lost in the city. And so I think that is a really useful practice is, can you allow yourself to get lost, even if it's just get lost in your own thoughts? Can you gift yourself with half an hour a day of non-doing, of doing nothing, of allowing yourself to be bored, to get lost in your thoughts? You know, I think we avoid that at all costs. You know, we always associate that with, that's lazy. You know, that's like, can we do that? And then put yourself in a context where you really know nothing, you know? So if it's, even if it's something like going for cooking classes or learning to play a musical instrument, you know, I'm learning to speak Spanish.
Oh, fabulous.
So it's, can you just get into that beginner's mind again and then take what you learned there and translate it into where you are in your work context? That's the one. The other thing is, I think, don't try and do it on your own. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that you'll see with, you know, all of these, there are very few of these ancient wayfinders who did not go in a group. You know, it's like they would send out scouts, or they would, you know, there was always, so don't try and do it on your own. You know, it's this complexity. A friend of mine likes to say complexity is a team sport, you know, so that's the other side of it. And then, to be cool, you know, it really is. It's, you're going to have to be courageous. You're going to have to be open to trying new things. You're going to need to learn how to observe not only your context, but your, it's a very deep, you know, it's almost linked to mindfulness practice. It's when you feel that reaction coming, when you feel a trigger, when you feel, oh, I can't just sit and do nothing, I need to go and do, can you be with that? And can you choose a different response? And then I think for leaders in particular, lightness is important. Is can you not take yourself too seriously? Can you allow yourself to say, I don't know, which links back to courage again for many leaders. And allow yourself to try some things and fail. And then set the what I want to caveat that with is to make it safe to do so. So Dave Snowden talks about safe to fail. And for me, in this context, that means, can you define your wayfinding space? Like, can you define, this is the territory that we'll be exploring. It might be uncharted, it's unknown, but it's bounded. You know, so there are some areas where we can't go. So if you think, you know, in a physical landscape, maybe there are mountains we can't cross, there are, you know, reefs in the ocean. So there's some places where we can't go. In a business context, this could be legislation. You know, there's a boundary here. We can't go there. It's limiting us. Then there's a direction that we want to head into. You know, we don't want to be completely directionless and just explore everywhere. You know, we have some kind of intent. You know, they talk about leaders' intent. So we are heading in a particular direction, although our end goal might not be clear. And then there's another boundary, which is around, what are we choosing not to explore? Because again, you know, we can't make this too broad. Who do we choose not to be? Where do we choose not to go? And once those boundaries are there, it almost creates an environment where, even though we don't know exactly what we'll encounter, we're still in unknown, uncharted territory. Because of those boundaries, it doesn't feel so overwhelming. So I think just going through that kind of a process as well, you know, and then also thinking about what wants to happen, you know, if you can see this unknown as a field of potential, you know, where is there already, you know, adjacent possibilities or things bubbling below the surface that seems to want to happen, and then to start exploring those. But I think a lot of this, especially, and not only for leaders, you know, I think also in complexity, we're all leaders in some sense. It's overcoming our addiction to feeling comfortable, you know, linking right where we started, wanting to control and wanting to know what's going to happen and wanting the certainty. It's the ability to get over that and to maintain momentum into the unknown. I think that's the biggest hurdle.
Amazing. Amazing. That was great advice. Thank you. And that's really resonated with me, because I'm going, and I will share this with the listeners, because I share everything with the listeners. I have had, in the end of this year, you know, I tend to every 3 years go, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Is this what I really want to be doing? And a lot of the things that you said to do, I have been doing, and it's in relation to, do I want to keep having my own company? And, you know, and there are certain things that are, I would say, blockers to success, but they are things I can't control, right? So I'm not going to waste energy changing those things. I'm going to think, well, what else can I do, since this is a blocker here? I can't go over there. So I'm not going to think about how I can change the way Australian companies do business, because I can't. and yeah, I have thought about, and I'm very comfortable. I'm very comfortable. And that is something that I've been considering. And you know, and really what I'm thinking is, do I want to keep having a business? Do I want to try and move overseas? And do I want to go back into consulting so I can work on bigger global projects? And the answer is, I don't know. I'm going to give it a year and decide. So, and it's also in relation to, do I want to keep doing this podcast that takes up so much time? and I think it's been a really good exercise, because it has helped me realize, okay, these are the places I don't want to go with my business. These are the places I do want to go with my career. These are the things that I know I'm being lazy and comfortable. And one of them is, I have it very good here. I have a great life in Melbourne, and I've built a really good reputation in Australia. Everybody knows me. So do I want to give that up? Right. So these are all the things that are going through my head. So I'm kind of, yeah, going through this little wayfinding exercise on my own. And you've really spoken to me there.
I think we underestimate the importance of those, let's call them seasons, in our lives where we kind of question everything. And I think there's so much value, and sometimes in complexity, it's the only thing you can know is where can't I go?
Yeah.
And what don't I want? Because sometimes, you know, and I think I'm super frustrating for people trying to coach me because they'll ask me what I want and I've got no idea.
Or it's everything. I want world domination. You know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I kind of, you know, and I think this is giving ourselves the freedom. You know, you've reminded me now of something long years ago. Brené Brown, that I'm sure you know who she is. She wrote this wonderful book called The Gifts of Imperfection. And she had a online course, a visual journaling course. I think she did it in partnership with Oprah or something like that, where you kind of work through the book. You work through the book and then you with visual multimedia journaling practices. And the very first practice that she made us do was you had to design what she called like a permission slip. You know, it was like this beautiful little card with, you know, lots of images on it. And then you had to say, I give myself permission to. And I got stuck right there because I suddenly realized how I'm so often I'm an obstacle to my own journey because I don't give myself permission to fail, to not be perfect, to not know. You know, it's all of these things that we've just been talking about, you know, and I found it so ironic because a lot of my work is around that, you know, helping people to, you know, embrace the messiness of not knowing, following an emergent path. You know, even now, you know, I've been feeling the calling to write a book for a long time. And now I feel stuck because I don't know exactly what the book should be about. And then a friend said to me the other day, you know, Sonia, you must just practice what you preach. Just start writing and trust that whatever it is that the book needs to be about will emerge. And you know, I almost had this like eye roll moment. And so it's and this is why I say it's not like we arrive at being fit. Mm. It's almost like continuous. It's learning to become aware of when we're falling back into this thing of needing to know, needing to have answers, needing to be perfect, needing to be in control. And then making that choice to surrender to the discomfort and to not knowing and to moving despite not knowing, you know, all of those things. So yeah, it's not just you that find yourself in these moments of questioning everything.
Yeah. And I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy to constantly question. And I think there's a lot of power in knowing what you don't want to do as well, because being clear on that, at least that gives you, you know, that puts some options to bed. And you can learn that in many ways. Like there are some things I know I definitely don't want to do, even though I haven't done it. And some things I know I don't want to do it because I did it and I hated it. No, that was wonderful. Do you have any other advice that you'd like to give the listeners?
You know, I can only really give advice from, I guess, my own journey, you know, and for me, I think just accepting that there is complexity in the world and that most of the time you are in an environment where things are unpredictable and you can't know everything and you can't control everything. And learning to relax into that and to not resist, I think that is probably the best advice I can give, because otherwise where we end up is in a place where, you know, even our physical health starts becoming compromised. You know, we live in, you know, so many people in the organizations I work with are very near to burnout. And some of that has got a lot to do with, you know, what we spoke about, you know, how organizations are structured and what they measure and all of these things. But a lot of it has to do with our own meaning-making, our own expectations of needing to be in control, needing to know everything. And that creates a lot of anxiety and stress. So if we can let go of that, you know, and that's why, you know, so even that talk that you heard at the World Agility Forum, you know, I'm trying to change people's perspective of complexity and what's going on in the environment. Yes, we will always have some anxiety, but we're creating unnecessary anxiety by resisting things like change.
Mm.
It's Change will always happen. Can we relax into it? So that, I think, is probably the best piece of advice I can give, is to just, complexity is life. Life is beautiful. There will be moments where it's not so beautiful. You can't control everything. So control what you can control, and surrender and relax in parts where you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Going through this little exercise, and it kicked off when I got back from my European trip, actually. And I did go to World Agility Forum, you know, obviously because I wanted to hear interesting meet interesting people and hear interesting talks. But it was also wanting to find out what's going on in other parts of the world, because in Australia, like, we can be a little bit insular because geographically we're isolated. And then we can fall victim to groupthink. And like you said, like, I wanted to know, is there more diversity of thought and diversity of practice? And I actually, you know, I remember being at an Agile conference locally recently and thinking, really very challenged by this. Like, I feel like we're all singing from the same hymn book. And when I was at World Agility Forum, there were some talks that really challenged me. And some of the things that were said, I really reacted to and disagreed with. And then in my head, I thought, well, you wanted to be challenged. You're being challenged. Like, open up your notebook and start taking notes, like, start listening. And then once I had that little thought process in my head, I felt a lot better about continuing to sit in the talk. And also when I went through this process, like, realizing, and I'll give an example so it's clear for the listeners what I'm talking about. So one blocker for me as an, you know, a small consultancy is I get a lot of leads and opportunities through my network, through people I've worked with before, or somebody I've worked with before recommends me to, you know, a colleague of theirs. So I get this opportunity. And we agree, yes, we want you to come and do this piece of work for us. And I'll go, great. So I have a company limited. Can I write you a proposal? Can we do a statement of work? Which is how, I don't know if it's done that way in South Africa. And they go, oh, actually, no, because you're not on our preferred supplier panel. And I go, okay, well, can I be on the panel? No. Oh, why not? I've got a company limited. I have all the necessary insurances. They're like, well, we set that panel up 10 years ago. And so you just, it's not open. And it's, and I'm like, well, you know, so that's really annoying. And then what they want you to do is they want you to subcontract through this supplier, who then takes quite a hefty cut of my money, which, and then once that happens, you become an employee. I'm no longer a consultant, and you get treated like an employee. So you can either say no and walk away from the opportunity, or you can accept that, right? So that's an example, and I see you nodding. So is that something that you've experienced as well? And and it's something that's been really, really grinding my gears and causing me a lot of frustration. And then I've just had this realization that you can't change this. Like, this is completely something that, you know, you can't, you can't undo the way businesses do business with each other. Like, this is so entrenched in our business culture. So that is one of, you know, and quite a, there's quite a, there's a number of other things going on, but that is one thing that prompted me to have this reset wave, because I'm like, well, you can't change it. So what are you going to do about it? You know? What are you going to do? So
And I think the problem with that, because that is such a wonderful example, Natasha, of what makes companies not be complexity fit. Because this is the one, you know, so if the only vendors that's on the approved vendor list are people that's kind of, or companies that's been there for years, those are not
big
necessarily
companies.
The company. Yeah, they're not the ones that's going to bring fresh thinking. They're not the ones, you know, and I find that in many companies, one of the biggest hurdles to their ability to pivot, to be adaptive, to be, sits in areas like procurement. And, you know, and so on the one hand, I fully agree with you, you know, you and I, we're probably not going to change that. But then at the same time, I'm like, but it has to change. Because if it doesn't change, these companies are going to become irrelevant faster.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's very frustrating. These
it probably happens about 50% of opportunities, I'd say. Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, for me, I can comply. I'm actually, I'm a bit of a rebel at heart, but then I'm also quite compliant. You know, I pay my taxes. I stick to the rules.
Mm.
But when those rules don't make sense,
yeah,
I find it extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know. I think, and I don't know what it will take for companies to start changing these things. You know, I suspect not in enough pain yet. But the one thing I do know is that it's not sustainable. That's just one example of hundreds, if not thousands.
Yes, that's not the only blocker that I'm having. But yeah, it is one example. And I'm like you, I'm like, yeah, I'll follow the process and that's part of the reason I started my own company in the first place, because I was getting gigs through my network and I was freelancing. So I was under like what we call a sole trader, which is kind of like, you know, an individual. Yeah. And they'd say, oh, okay, well, you know, you got to then have your invoices processed by this talent agency. And then I'd see my invoice, you know, on some report at work, and I'd realize they're taking like $300 a day and they're just processing my invoices. And I was like, if I went direct, anyway, it's a whole other thing. But yeah, like, and even that process as well, I did think, well, the people who are on these panels are like the PwCs and the Accentures and, you know, these really, really big consultancies. And I was like, should I try and become that? And then the answer was immediately, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to. And also there's a huge amount of risk associated with that. I'm just one person. But that was one thing I never, you know, I don't want to become one of those. So that's one door that I have closed myself and won't be opening again. This has been wonderful. I'm conscious you need to start your work day. So I wanted to ask you, where can people get more Sonia?
There are two websites where they can go and have a look. So one is complexityfit.com. And then there's also morebeyond.co.za. So a lot of the wayfinding things would be on More Beyond. And then they can find me on LinkedIn, and I blog on Medium. So I'm not too hard to find.
Yeah, thankfully. Pop all of those things in the show notes. Sonia, thank you so much for having this discussion with me today about wayfinding and complexity fitness. I've had an absolute blast.
Oh, thank you. Thanks again for inviting me, Natasha. And I also had fun.